they want to wander in here, they can, but we got a full night ahead of us, and we'll need a few of you to help set up beds and stuff after this over in the other place for Women's Great Banquet number 98. And so we'll go ahead and get started tonight, so let's pray. Lord, I ask that you be with us tonight and that you open these scriptures to us and not only make it informative for us and useful for us in terms of our lives, but tonight I ask that make it a little bit interesting as well in terms of humor, in Jesus' name. Amen. A couple years ago, we had our first men's retreat here 2 years ago, and we used a number of things in it that to kind of express how men are with women and stuff. And since we're tying off Abigail here, I'm going to say this about David. David used a product that we're going to introduce to you right now because he actually listened to Abigail, whereas her husband, Nabal, the fool, is a stubborn meathead of a guy, and he did not use this stuff. And I want to show you what all men should have, I hope, just as we start this thing. Because all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And
men, how many times has this happened to you?
To me. You know, our babies sleep really, really good.
Or this.
Make sure Timmy wears the blue shirt. If he doesn't.
Or even this.
And for my birthday, which is next month, I'd really like some of this.
Do you have trouble listening or retaining information from your wife? You could be suffering from spousal selective listening, or SSL. With SSL, valuable input is intercepted or scrambled before it reaches the critical learning center of the man brain. Virtually anything can trigger it, like sports, food, even shiny objects with buttons. Fortunately, there is help with Hiratol. Containing a rare root with an exotic name, Hiratol helps men focus and listen to valuable female input, even pick up on those subtle hints.
These are exactly the earrings I wanted. How did you know?
Thanks, Hiratol. Now I can hear it all.
Hiratol has not been tested or approved by any regulatory agency. Side effects with Hiratol include minor to severe headaches and spontaneous combustion. Use caution when using Hiratol near mothers-in-law, as you may hear hurtful comments that would have previously been ignored. Hiratol is an enhancement drug. Do not use around children or clusters of talkative old blue-haired women. If focused listening lasts longer than 4 hours, consult your doctor immediately before your wife assumes this is a new standard in your relationship. Men with wives who are nursing or pregnant should not take this product. Hiratol, the preferred selection or solution for selective hearing.
As I said, we're dealing with men who have a girl in front of them who is kind of leading them. And obviously, David must have used that product. I want to start tonight by reading from chapter 25 of 1 Samuel. And I'm going to look at verses 32 and following in this. And we're going to tie off this part of the thing in terms of Abigail. And I just want to walk through it. We had actually gotten down to verses 36 last week, but I want to back up just a few verses. Now, you know what's happening here is that David is like Robin Hood out there, and he's taking care of business and protecting people and all over the country, and he asks Nabal for some provisions for his 600 men and everything, and Nabal's a jerk and doesn't help him out. And so David's ready to kill the guy, and he gets all 400 men together, and they go and kill it. And Abigail steps in and saves her husband because he's an idiot. And that's what happens. Anyway, the other thing that happens is Abigail also saves David from, they call it blood guilt in here. But what happens is that she stops him from killing him, and that's a good thing because later on it would affect his leadership in terms of people around the country, because if he starts killing the people that are in the country, then they're going to start looking at him with a lot of suspicion, and she saves him out of that. We talked about all that last week. We found out that basically David is teachable. And he's flexible, and he obviously used it here at all, but he's willing to change. So we're going to start at 32, and I'm going to kind of finish this up and then kind of give you a little bit of grasp in terms of what we can learn from this whole chapter. And David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from avenging myself with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had made haste and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male." Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have hearkened to your voice, and I have granted your petition." And what he's doing is, you got to remember that David is the king. He has just not assumed the throne at this point because Saul is still holding that position. But he is the one who is going to replace Saul, and he is God's anointed, and Saul isn't anymore. But he's teachable and flexible enough here to be willing to listen to her, and he is not bullheaded like her husband was. Now, what about the justice and the vengeance or God's purpose for her? Now, none of these people have read their stories in the Bibles. We may know the end of these stories, but they don't know these things. And none of us know our stories either, what's going to happen to us or how things are going to work out in our life. And so God in our lives has to be one in which we walk by faith, but we also walk with a vertical understanding of the world as well as just looking at things horizontally. So what about her? What's God's purpose for her? Does she go home and get, "Well, honey, thanks for saving my life from Nabal"? No, she doesn't get that at all. Verses 36 to 38, "And Abigail came to Nabal, and lo, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king." And that's in there for a reason, because he's acting, "Hey, I am somebody." "And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. And in the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord smote Nabal, and he died." Now, she doesn't know any of that's going to happen. Nabal doesn't know that he's going to stroke out on her when he gets mad enough. She's a wise woman, and she is living with a bullheaded man who is obstinate and mean-spirited, and he has a stroke. Well, it's nice to read that. Everybody would probably cheer for old Abigail at that point in time because getting rid of that clown. But she doesn't know that. And one of the things that we need to understand is that David is a man after God's own heart. And Abigail has actually got that same kind of heart. Because in spite of the fact that she is married to this mean-spirited fool, she takes care of him as best she can. In other words, she is faithful to him. Kind of like David is faithful to Saul, even though Saul wants to kill him. And God takes care of business. And this was a test of character for her. She could have run up into the hills and said, "I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to let David come down here. He'll take care of this business, and I will just pray that he takes him quickly." This is a test of character here in terms of her as well as David. It's also a test of character if you look at Nabal, but he's not going to be anything good. One of the things that we have to deal with in terms of our own faith and our own lives is we have not read our story, and a lot of things that we deal with in this life is a test of our character, and the question has to do with faithfulness. Do you trust him? Do you trust God with your life? When you're in it up to your neck, you might say, she could have done the easy thing here. She could have gone up there and wait in the hills till God deals with her husband. She could have She could have been killed, though, in the story. She could have been raped by all of David's men, for that matter, suffering from the king's wrath. But David would have blood guilt on his hands, and he would get blamed for it, and she saved him. So, it's a test of character for her. Now, verses 39 to 42. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult." In other words, do you believe that vengeance is mine? I shall repay, saith the Lord, or not? Do you believe that? David is expressing that particular truth that God has said. Has avenged the insult I have received at the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from evil. In other words, he kept David from doing the blood guilt thing of murder. The Lord has returned the evil doing of Nabal upon his own head. Now, when we're looking at this, we're looking at the evil doing of Nabal when he was in this part of the story. But we don't know how bad this guy was, what's not written down here at all. So you always have to remember that, too. Then David sent and wooed Abigail to make her his wife. And when the servants of David came to Abigail Carmel, they said to her, "David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife." And she rose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." And Abigail made haste and rose and mounted on an ass, and her five maidens attended her. And she went after the messengers of David and became his wife and lived happily ever after. No, not quite. You know, life is life. And even though I really do like the stories of Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and all those things, and they're always, and they're really nice, but yeah, life doesn't usually turn out quite like that. Abigail is his wife. But verses 43 and 44, David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and both of them became his wives. Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. In other words, David's real wife, which was Michal, or his first wife, I'll just say first wife at this point in time, was taken away from him by Saul and given to another man. David marries Abigail, but he also takes a second wife at the same time. So Abigail is his wife, but there are two of them. How do you think she handled being one of two? That's a good question to ask yourself. How do you think she handled that? I think that she probably handled it the same way she handled her previous marriage to Nabal, which is she was wise, she took care of business, and she was loyal to her husband. I believe that that's probably what takes place here. Out of these stories, you know, once again, she's not read her story. She doesn't know all about it. David hadn't read his story either, for that matter. Nobody has. None of us have either. So there's a couple of things that I want you to pick up out of this particular part of this story of David and Saul and Abigail's specific story here is this. Be wise and wait. Be wise and wait. First off, be wise. Don't work it out on your own. A lot of times what we do is we're into the gift of manipulation and working things out on our own. And I know that that is a tendency that we all have. If you look at the stories that are in the Bible, there are a lot of people in there who decide they're going to work it out on their own time frame, rather than giving God his due and being wise enough to not work things out on their own. I learned it. I used to pray prayers. Oh, Lord, I want you to do this and that for me, and all those kinds of things. But over the years, I have learned this truth. I don't pray those things much anymore, because if some of those things had ever come true, oh, my God, would I be in trouble. But what I've learned to do is, Lord, I don't know what you're going to work in terms of my life or this life or that, but I want your will to come through. And I want you to work things out. I said, you know the situation I'm in, or whoever I'm praying for. You know that situation. And I know that you know how to work things out in terms of that. So I bring that situation under your will and according to the need of the people, whether it's me or somebody else I'm praying for. Don't work things out on your own. Put them in God's hands. But we want to take care of it ourselves. The other thing that has to do with that is, in being wise enough, is your situation may not change at all. We don't know how long she was married to Nabal before God intervened in the terms of her life. We don't know how long. We can speculate later on in terms of how long she was married to David and things, and how all that played out in terms of, and she'll re-enter the story here at another time, but your situation may not really change. But if you put your heart and your mind and your will into God's hand, your situation may not change, but you will. And you may need to change. And we don't like change, of course, because change hurts. But sometimes that's what it is. And the second part of this is looking at is waiting around. Now, a couple of things that I've cut, be wait, wise and wait, because God's timing is everything in terms of this. The other thing that I want you to look at in terms of situation, because if you think about this life situation that Abigail was in and what was going on, there could have been a lot of violence involved here because people just react to things. And in reality, that's true of a lot of our stories. You know, when things start happening to us, our first thing is to react. I've learned this truth: see first. And what I mean by that is don't make any judgments, don't make any kind of reaction to anything, but see the situation first. And if you can, look at both sides of the argument. Now, actually, to see two sides of an argument is the mark of a first-rate genius, but it's because it's hard to do, to look at both sides of an argument. Especially if you're on one side. Because if you try to put yourself in the other person's shoes, it may be very difficult. The second thing is always restrain yourself. This is the gift of self-control. But you need to restrain yourself. Never react. Always respond. And this is a hard thing to learn to do because, you know, when something hits you hard, our first thing we want to do is we want to, usually with our tongue, is we're going to lash out. But I'm here to tell you, don't do that. Hold your tongue. Never react. Respond. Now, what is response? Response is when you actually put a little bit of space between what is happening and you. And this is something you have to do very intentionally in terms of life, because it's not an easy thing to learn this trick, but it's very helpful in things. I deal with a lot of people in a lot of different situations, and I've come to learn I don't want to react to this, I want to respond to this, so I need to put a little bit of space between me and the situation or the person or whatever, if I can, so that I don't just knee-jerk react to things. Don't do that. Respond to things. You'll notice in this story that Abigail is not reacting. She is responding to the life situation that she is. The third thing that I've come to realize is haste is of the devil. One of the things that the devil just loves to do with people, he loves to get us stampeded. But if he can get you separated out of the herd, you might say, and he can get your attention and he can scare you half to death, your first reaction is to get stampeded. And you get moving away from him. And a lot of times that is the work of the devil. Haste is of the devil. Don't react. Respond. And then pray. The fourth thing is pray. And this is where you pray, Lord, I need your perspective in terms of this circumstance, this person, this life situation. I need your perspective, not mine, because my viewpoint may be very skewed because of where I am in terms of this situation. And so that's when you have to back up. And that'll stop you right there from reacting if you just say, Lord, I need you to talk to me here because I don't know what this all means and I need to be able to see with your eyes. That's why learning to wait is kind of hard to do, but it's important because timing is everything. In terms of how God works in this world, timing is so important in people's lives. And I've come to realize that in ministry over the years. It may not need to happen today, whatever that is, because God's timing may have something else in mind. And so that teaches us to wait. And waiting's hard because that requires patience because that's not getting done on your timetable. Anyway, she's learning. She learns these things. She actually functions very well. Then she has a test of character because she has to be faithful to her husband who is probably, he's worse than Saul, I think. I think he's mean-spirited as well. But her test of character is she chooses to be faithful to him in spite of the fact that he is such a jerk. Okay? And that's Abigail for you for now. And now we're going to move on to 1 Samuel chapter 27. Now, I want to back up and tell you now, we looked at chapter 24. Chapter 24 was when David spares Saul's life. Chapter 25 is when he has all this trouble with Nabal. And chapter 26 is when he spares Saul's wife life again down in that camp. So we got a lot of things that are happening along this line. And none of them are the best situations in the world for David. Okay? One time he gets tempted to kill Saul. The second time he does it as a king and he spares Saul's wife. But then he has to deal with Nabal, and she saves his derriere from blood guilt. And so all these things are going on in David's life. And if you look back up, you learn Saul's been trying to kill him. He strips him of his wife. He strips him of his home. He strips him of his position. He takes Samuel out of the picture for him. He even gets the church out of the picture. We've gone all through this. All this stuff has happened to David just because he killed Goliath. You know, I realize that most all of us can say, boy, I tell you what, nobody knows the trouble I've seen. But I'm here to tell you, I don't think anybody's seen the trouble David's seen, except for us in this Bible study. We may know. And so here we come to chapter 27, which is after he has saved Saul's life again. And Saul said, you're such a good guy. And I said, but they go different ways in verse 25 of chapter 26. Then Saul said to David, blessed be you, my son David. You will do many good things and will succeed in them. So David went his way, and Saul returned to his place. Okay, you got an idea of what's all going on in David's life? Okay, before I do delve into this, in the men's bathrooms here at Lampstand Church, over the urinals, we have motivating signs. You girls seen any of those when you use the bathroom on a women's weekends? They're motivating signs as we go to the bathroom. Well, my mind is such that I am a little bit rancid around the edges at times. And I said, what if we put up other signs? And so I went to Despair Incorporated and looked at some signs that demotivate us. So we're going to look at a few signs tonight because this is where David is. Let me read verse 1 first. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul, and there's nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul would despair of seeking me any longer within the borders. He said, I shall perish one day. He's been demotivated, folks. You got those signs? We're going to go walk through them. Hope may not be warranted at that point. Think about it. You're laying looking up. Okay. Oh, ambition. The journey of 1,000 miles sometimes ends very, very badly. Believe in yourself because the rest of us think you're an idiot. Put them at the urinals, right, guys? Challenges. I expected times like this, but never thought they'd be so bad, so long, and so frequent. And I think this could be David's sign. Put it in his cart or something. Consistency is only a virtue if you're not a screw-up. Distinction. Looking sharp is easy when you haven't done any work. Okay, for those of you who are listening to this CD down the road, this sign says, English, I told you to learn it, and it's some guy who is a foreigner using preparation H for toothpaste. Foresight. So those who say it cannot be done should not interrupt those busy proving them right. Idiocy. Never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups. And how many more of these we got? Legacy. It took millions of years to create something this extraordinary. You have about 74. Motivation. If a pretty poster and a cute saying are all it takes to motivate you, you probably have a very easy job. The kind robots will be doing soon. I love them. Perseverance. The courage to ignore the obvious wisdom of turning back. The sandstorm. Those of you who are listening to this on CD, you can't see the pictures. So what is it? What's the, where do they go? Despair Incorporated? What? Despair.com is where you can find these things. Retirement. Because you've given so much of yourself to the company and you don't have anything left we can use. God, that's the way I'm going to feel. Tradition. Just because you've always done it that way doesn't mean it's not incredibly stupid. And wisdom. Sometimes the only difference between a budding genius and a blooming idiot is where they choose to take a stand. That's worth. Just because you're necessary doesn't mean you're important. I love them. Anyway, I brought these things up because, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. David, at this point in time, and David said in his heart, now we have walked through everything he's gone through, and somehow he has managed most of the time to be pretty upbeat in the whole thing. But here he is in chapter 27. And David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. David is in the pits of life. And I have to give him credit for being as positive as he's been all these times in these other chapters we've been going through. We don't know how many years of his life that makes up. But it wasn't one day, I guarantee, or one month. Despair and despondency comes. Every one of us can be broken. I don't care who you are. If enough stuff hits you over enough time, you can be broken. And David is in the pits at this point in time. And a lot of D words come to mind in terms of discouragement, disillusionment, despair, despondency. And all this is taking place at this point in time when he says, I shall now just die at the hands of Saul. So I'm going to read on. So David arose and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. And when it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he sought for him no more. Now, David is a guy that basically came to a fork in the road. Now, he's about to spend 16 months with the Philistines. So he's really going to be with the Philistines in the world for 16 months of disobedience, I guess, away from God at that point in time. Why? Well, he'd been beaten up so many times that he probably just threw up his hands at one point and he went into despair. And I have to say this, I don't blame him. Do you blame him? I don't think so, man. The guy's been beat pretty good over the years. And what happens is he's been beat up so many times and he slips away from his spiritual life. And that's what's happening to him. And we can take this story and we can say, there are about three things that can also happen to us. When you read the book of Psalms, and there are a lot of psalms in there about that David wrote, and at different times in his life, and different times when he's in exile over there, when he's in the cave and everything, there are different times when he writes these psalms, but there are no psalms about this period of time, these 16 months here. This is where he quits looking up. David said in his heart, and I think that's very important. He said it in his heart. I shall now just let it go. Have you ever talked to yourself? Boy, I have. I don't know about the rest of you, but I talk to myself a lot. It's when I start talking back, though, that's kind of scary. But, I mean, I've talked to myself. But you notice that what he's doing here is he's just looking horizontal. He is not looking up at all. He is just talking about his life and where he is at this point in time in his life, and he is not bringing God into this. So what he's doing is he is slipping away from his spiritual life. And we do that as well. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if anybody had a reason to, he had a reason to. But he doesn't pray, and he doesn't look up. In all of chapter 27, which is 16 months, he doesn't pray, and he doesn't look up. Now, we know all the bad things that have happened to him, but let's also think about this. He's not a total failure. First off, he killed Goliath. And then he was made the head of the armies of Saul in some areas, and he had lots of victories in terms of that. He had victories when he was just playing Robin Hood out there in the country as well. So he's not totally devoid of that, because God had been with him and gave him great success. And because of that great success, envy and jealousy entered into Saul's life, and he went after him, but he wasn't a total failure. He had his wins along with his losses. But at this point in time, no matter how many wins he's had, it doesn't feel like victory. And, you know, that's one of those things that is, it's really not quantifiable. Because you can have a lot of people tell you, man, that was a great job, you did a great thing. And you have one person say, I thought it stunk. And, oh, God, don't do that to me. And all it is one person saying something like that, or one little thing that doesn't go right, and it can tear you up. And one of the things that happens to us as well is when we get like David and we're looking horizontal more, we may know that God's there, but we don't think about it in terms of our lives and his purpose in our lives and his working in our lives. We forget that God is with us in these struggles that we have. And trouble comes at home, maybe it's day in and day out, and or maybe it's years that it takes place, and then we begin to come apart in terms of that, and then we say in our heart, I might as well go out in the garden and eat worms, because this is going bad on me, and I'm just such a failure, and life really stinks, and we do it, don't we? And I can make light of it up here, but if you're doing it and you're living it, it's not fun, is it? But we do it. We say in our heart, whatever you want to say in your heart, he says, Saul's going to get me. I know this Saul's going to come down. I'm not going to get done what I want to do with my life. You can put in your own. I'm not going to find that right guy or that right gal. I'm not going to succeed in my business. My ambitions are failing. And there he goes. And we think horizontally. We don't think. God may be in the background, but we don't look up. And second thing that happens is pessimistic reasoning. Oh, pessimistic reasoning. And we look at our future and we think it's inevitably bleak. And it's just pessimistic thinking. That's what it is. Because if you have optimistic reasoning instead of the pessimistic reasoning, you may say, you know, what I got out in front of me doesn't look very good, but I think I can get through this. But when your heart turns pessimist and things get bleak and, oh, God, I'm going to fail here, adversity is taken in a negative way. Remember, David, Samuel has anointed you king. And if you believe what God is going to do for you, he'll take care of that in his time. Abigail, who you have just picked up, she's a real smart gal in a real short skirt, and she's good looking, and you're the king, and she said, you're the king. Saul himself has said, you're going to replace me, David, because God is with you. These are things that he's been told. And he falls into the pit anyway. And, you know, and then he just goes down in. He's got the Eeyore feel. Okay, he's coming down on me. Now, why do we get like that? Why do we get like that? I think it could be the winter of our soul. I don't know. I mean, if things hit you enough, it'll drive you into that kind of place. But sometimes I think it's just we don't think about looking up. we're just looking out there, and it doesn't look too good. And of course, that's how you see the world, is the way you are, not the way the world is. And then we get into rational reasoning. Oh, and I love this part of it. We're so rational that we aren't rational. The rational reasoning is we look at everything from strictly a human viewpoint. And when hard times hit us, oh, God left me. I know He has. I've lost all the promises, all the ambitions, or all the things that I thought were going to happen to me. I thought I would be king. You can put that in your own part in there if you want to. And I think of the demotivation posters. Get to work. You're not going to get any better anyway. Go to the Philistines. That's what he does. And he might as well have said, I'm going to go out in the garden and eat worms. Because he said, I'm going to go on down to the Philistines. And when he says he's going to the Philistines, I'm going to tell you something that I know about this. When he says, so David arose and went over with his 600 men to the king of Gath, and that's in the Philistine areas, and he's there. In the Bible, you can take this one to the, when it talks about the Philistines or Phoenicia, or if it talks about Egypt, both of them are really a picture of the world. So in other words, David is going into the world. He's leaving his spiritual life, and he's just going to motivate himself into the world, because Egypt and Phoenicia have always been a picture of the world. And I've seen this happen with people. One of God's people gets called with purpose and destiny. You know, every one of us is a king or a queen in terms of that. We talk a lot about lost people in the church, you know, Christians who opt for the world. They call it backsliding. I don't really think backsliding is the term that I would use in terms of that. What we do is we go into the world. We leave our spiritual life. We quit looking up, and we begin to live horizontally. And David looks like a non-believer here. He goes into the world, the Philistines' world. And he picks up their lifestyle, but he's not one of them. He's an Israeli. He's one of God's people. And what he does is he begins to rely on himself and his own strength and his own hand. Let me read the rest of this chapter to you, and then pick him up at verse 5. Then David said to Achish, if I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be given me in one of the country towns that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? In other words, he said, I don't need to be like you, a king. So that day, Achish gave him Ziklag. Ziklag. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day. And the number of the days that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. That's quite a while. Now, David and his men went up and made raids upon the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. For these were in the inhabitants of the land from the old, as far as Shur to the land of Egypt. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the asses, the camels, the garments, and came back to Achish. And when Achish asked, against whom have you made a raid today? David would say, against the Negev of Judah, or against the Negev of the Jerahmeelites, or against the Negev of the Kenites. Notice he's not talking about the ones that he actually went against. Lest they should tell about, and David said, save neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, thinking, lest they should tell about us and say, so David has done. Such was his custom. All the while he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. And Achish trusted David, thinking, he has made himself utterly abhorred by his people Israel. Therefore he shall be my servant always. Now what is he doing here? First off, one of the things that he's doing, and then in verses 2 and 3, so David arose and went over, and he and the 600 men who were with him and his two wives, he brought them with him too. One of the things that I've come to realize is David looks like a non-believer. He's picking up the world's style of living, and he relies on himself, his own strength, his own hand. He's not looking to God. God is not in this chapter, really, except that he's there, but he's not. Now, we call them backsliders, but I think that's a poor call on this thing. Man is the only animal I know who runs faster when he has lost his way. We sprint when we lose our way. And what he does is he forsakes his spiritual life. That's what backsliders, people who forsake their spiritual life. And I've seen this happen. I've been in this church 17 years. I was at this church down in Kentucky for 23 years. And because of that, I got to take tours in people's lives. I got to see generations come and go, literally. And one of the things that I know is we think that when we go off into the world and we get off on our own way, it doesn't affect anybody else. But it does, because your life, my life, we have consequences that come to our lives because of that. And we don't do it alone. In verses 2 and 3, right here, what does David do? He takes his business and his family with him. In other words, everybody that's around him is going with him into the world. And you can have these kinds of examples everywhere. You can have them out there in society. We watch this happen in terms of big names in our society. You know what? That's what happened with Richard Nixon back when he went sour in 74 or whatever. He took everybody with him that was part of his crew. I think back to the Assembly of Gods when Swaggart and Jim Baker went bad. They took everybody down with them. And we saw in the dot-com era back in 2000, and when Enron went down, those corporations, they wiped out tons of people. This new guy Madoff. Richard Dreyfuss is playing his story. He takes everybody down with him in terms of that. Now, these are the bad examples, okay? But there are good examples out there, too, in terms of people. If you go back into the 70s and you talk about Dell and Jim and Gates and Microsoft and Dell, and then Steve Jobs when he was with Apple and when he came back to Apple, these guys took everybody with them. And they succeeded in terms of things. I look at sports. When you look at a guy like Vince Lombardi and what he did with Green Bay and what he did, he took everybody with him. He took all those players with him. When Dickus showed up in Chicago in 82 or whatever it was, he says, we're going to be there in 3 years, and he took everybody with him. And the one I really like is Phil Jackson, because Phil Jackson knows how to manage egocentric basketball players. And every place he has been a coach, he succeeds, but he takes all these people with him. To think that we don't take people with us in terms of these things, that we are mistaken. Churches do this. I know this. I've been around churches forever. I've seen good churches and I've seen bad churches, and I guarantee you, as goes the leadership, so go the people. Period. And that's the way it works. And David is a man who decides that God is no longer important to him. And he's going to go into his world, and what he does is he takes everybody with him. In the Bible, you've got people that do that kind of stuff too. I did a study on Abraham. Abraham was a man who was following God's lead, and when he was following God's lead, everybody prospered. And when he went sour and he went to Egypt twice, things went awry and fell apart. And that included his wife and all his people and his business and everything else. And there's consequences to our actions. And the law of the harvest enters into this. But he does get some consequences. In verse 4 it says, you know, Saul quit looking for him. He didn't go after him anymore, for that matter. So what happens here is David gets, I tell you what, I've seen people go into the world, back into the world. I take tours in people's lives, and I see people come and go. And if they go into the world, one of the things that we get is we get a false sense of security. He says, well, he didn't have Saul after him anymore, but he's out there in the world, and you can sit in your seat in church and not do anything. You don't have to give. You don't even have to worship. All you do is show up occasionally. You don't have to care. You don't have to pray. You don't have to do anything, and you can be very comfortable in your seat. And you can have a false sense of security. Oh, God's got me covered, and I don't have to worry about anybody else at all. And if you sit there in that seat, the devil's not going to get after you because he's got you paralyzed already. You're neutralized in terms of that. So why? I'm not going to mess with that person. I don't have to. He doesn't have to deal with Christians that sit there on their derrieres. So you don't have to worry about satanic harassment. You don't have to worry about the hassle of being a Christian. Saul stops following him. But it's a choice to either walk with God and be his man or woman in this world, or to do what David did, which is, I'm going out of this stuff. I'm getting out of this right now because I've had enough of it. I seem to have nothing but trouble when it comes to this, and I'm getting out of it. Now, I'm not going to tell you that sin doesn't have its pleasures, folks. But it does, because it does. You can go out there and you can party till dawn. And you can have a good old time in terms of that. Because sin has its pleasures. You can go into the world and you don't even have to act like a Christian. Disobedience has its moments, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. It has its moments. And that's why it's so enticing to people. And so if you want to run away from God, it's a good place to go. Or if you just want to go out and have fun, it's a good place to go. You can go into the world. You don't even have to act like a Christian at all. But I'm here to tell you this: if you're God's man or his woman in this world and you do that, you're going to have, it's like a person with a foot in two different boats. And you know, those boats just start sliding apart. And there you are. That's kind of what happens in terms of this stuff. When back in 1995, how am I doing? We're not going to get too far in this guy. So I'll just tell you a story. Stories are good. Back in 1995, I had been at the church down in Kentucky for about 16 years. They decided that they're going to be nice to me, and they gave me a 3-month sabbatical where I could do whatever I wanted to do. And it's not really a classified as vacation, but it could be. But it was a 3-month sabbatical where I could just go off and do whatever I wanted for 3 months. So part of that time, I go to where I believe that the membrane between heaven and earth is kind of thin. And sometimes you can see across. I went to Panama City Beach for a week of that time, and I was remembered. And since it was my sabbatical, I didn't have to be a preacher for 3 months. Yay! I was kind of like in that limbo period of time. And so one night or one evening, I was at, I don't know which place. It's the last local beach thing. Anybody been down there? What's the name of the place? Anyway, I was there, and they had a band in there that night, and I was sitting there, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to go in there and have a meal and have a couple of beers, listen to the music, and do this. This guy sits down next to me, and he wants to talk. And I'm going, oh, God, that's all I do. And so he talks, and he tells me what he's doing and all this stuff, and I say, well, he said, what do you do? I said, I'm in sales. It's true. Marketing. And so we talked some more, and he kept bugging me. You know, he kept working the edges. And finally, I had to spill the beans and tell him what I did. And the problem with that is that, and I know you people do this because I know it. And because you all think I'm made out of wood at times, and I'm not a real person up here. I'm just not like you at all, and everything. So a lot of times, blue smoke just starts coming up around me, and so this guy starts to get religious. I'm going, oh crap! So he's telling me this stuff, and his life is a mess. I mean, it's a total disaster. And he's telling me this, and so I had to put on the minister's hat. Well, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be in the world. I didn't want to be what I knew I was. And I just said, the church gave me the sabbatical. God, why don't you do this? So anyway, I ended up with this guy for a six-pack and 2.5 hours worth of counseling, at which point I decided that if I wasn't a minister, I'd be a bartender because you get the same kind of clientele. But I talked to this guy, and I did, you know, I gave him counsel is what I did for 2.5 hours. And actually, I gave him some stuff, and I stayed in touch with him for maybe 6 months to a year after that. I don't know what happened after that. But it was one of those times where I was kind of like David was. I think about it. When I was in the world, I wanted to be in the world. I did not want to be a Christian as such. And that's where David is at this point in time. He's out there, and he's in the world, and he says, I am not going to be a Jewish person. I'm not going to be an Israeli. I'm not going to be the king of Israel, you know, coming up. I'm just going to go out here and act like the rest of the world. And that's where we find David at this point in time. And that may be where we leave this thing tonight. By the way, what you do when you do this stuff, though, is you submit to the world. And that's where the trouble starts. It's when you submit to the world around you in terms of how you live it. Okay, we're going to pray. We'll come right back to this next week, right in this area, when he's out there in the world. Lord, I ask that you take anything I said tonight and work it into our lives the way that you can, for what it's worth, and help us at least realize that we can be very much like David and get ourselves out there in the world and not even think about you. And lose our perspective on life. And I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.